Today's episode is brought to you by Become the Spotlight. If you run a business, then you need to learn how to grab your ideal audience's attention. If you don't, I hate to break the bad news, it's game over for you. So how do you stand out in a sea of noise when it feels crowded and that everybody else is shouting? Well, the answer is simple. You master the five principles of how to become the spotlight in your industry. Now, I have divided these five principles based on the most inspiring and compelling guests I've had on the show. I identified the five criteria that make them so unique and yet so compelling. If you want to find out how you match up against these five principles, head over to www.becomethespotlight.com and find out the areas which you can celebrate and, more importantly, the areas that you need to improve on. That's www.becomethespotlight.com. And I can't wait to see what score you end up with. Hi, and welcome back to the Unconventionist Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRouste, and today's conversation is going to spark a lot of your curiosities. Now, I'm excited to share with you this powerful and definitely unconventional conversation with Paulina Tenner, who is the founder of Grantree and is a TEDx speaker, an angel investor, author, serial entrepreneur, and all those kind of things. But more importantly, she is an author of the brand new book coming out called Laid Bare, What the Business Leader Learned from the Stripper. Now, she describes the lesson that she learned as a burlesque dancer, and we dive deeper into this conversation around that fear of exposure on a whole other level. Like, if you're listening to this, chances are that you fall into the 70% of people who classify themselves as introverts and who the very idea of having to put yourself out there is scary as hell. So imagine having to go out there, strip yourself naked almost, and dance in front of strangers and move in front of strangers and have all of the eyes on you. It's a fascinating conversation about how she took those lessons and implemented into her business and how she decided with the co-founders around how could they disrupt the way that businesses are built. She shares some of the books that really changed and shifted the way that they adopted new cultures within the organization at Grantree. And since 2010, her team grew organically from 2 to 50, and she's raised over £200 million for more than 600 technology startups and scale-ups using solely government funding schemes. So it's an amazing conversation. Their company culture is pioneering itself. They started a self-set salary scheme. And as you're going to hear, I dive deep into this kind of intricacies of what does it mean to actually set up your own salary. And she's a big believer in holacracy. So if you want to find out more about that, make sure to go and check out her information. It'll all be in the show notes. And if you enjoyed today's conversation, please leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. Let me know what you most enjoyed about the conversation. When you do that, what it does is it triggers an Apple Podcast, say, hey, this podcast might be interesting for other people. And to start sharing with other people so we can have these powerful conversations, change more people's lives. So thank you for your help. Now, the last thing I wanted to share before we jump into the conversation is that, in case you hadn't noticed, there is a brand new look at the Unconventionist. I haven't really changed the logo that much, I think, in 6 years. And it was about time to get a bit of a facelift. And so I reached out to Hadrian Chatley over at The Wern to get some help. And we've been working on this over the last few months. And finally, we're launching and rolling out the new branding campaign. And if you go and have a look at it, what I love about it is they are effectively the four emojis of the Unconventionalist. It's kind of like the experiences and emotions that you would feel as a result of listening to the podcast, right? So it's like, I can't believe they just said that. Oh my God, like I need to pay attention to this, you know? So it's kind of like this animated interweb world of the Unconventionalist and unconventionalism into the thumbnail. I'd love to hear what you think. What are your thoughts on the new branding, the new look, what it means to you? Let me know over at Mark LaRouste on social media, or you can always come and check me out at theunconventionalist.com and leave me a message. I always love to hear from you. I've got some big announcements to make coming up, so please do stay tuned. But in the meantime, I give you the one and only Paulina Tenner. Paulina, welcome to the Unconventionalist Podcast. Good to have you.
Amazing to be here. Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome. We made a joke yesterday. We were both on a clubhouse room talking about this interview, and you said you apologize for the delay, and because last time we saw each other, I came on your show. I don't know if that, I'd love to hear an update. I don't know if that's still going or not. Humility, and you invited me to your place and we sat down and you asked me what my favorite tea was, and I appreciated that. Is that still going? Is that still something you're kind of running, or did you put a pause on that?
So I recorded six interviews, and yep. I put a pause on that. I'm doing an online summit about fuck-ups, the Great Fuck-Up yep. Summit.
Yeah.
So that's something that's coming up. And I may come back to humility after lockdown. Who knows?
Yeah. No, I love it. Well, so it's interesting, right? Because when you reached out again and saying, hey, love to come on the show, and if that's still on the table, I was like, yeah, awesome. And then you sent me like an updated about what you're up to. And I just thought it was so cool. Like there's a few things I'd love to talk to you about. One of them, so obviously you've got a book coming out that is very exciting that we're going to be talking about. One of the things is, I don't know where I saw this. I don't remember where I saw this. Might have been the bio that you sent over. But the company that you started, there's a concept in which people choose their own salaries. Is that?
Yeah.
Did I make that up, or is that true?
That's true. No, you didn't make that up.
Yeah. So tell us about Grand Tree and how did you come up with, or at least be open to, the idea that we're going to do things differently here?
Sure. So ever since we started, my business partner and my then boyfriend, when we were starting a company, now husband, we kind of wanted to create a kind of workplace where we would want to get a job if we're looking for a job today. And I remember that day, maybe two and a half years into the existence of the business, where we sat down with a kind of corporate coach slash consultant type guy who was our mentor for a while back then. And he drew out an org chart and said, okay, this is how it's going to work. You're going to have a CEO and then CTO and CMO and CFO and whatever underneath. And you have to be thinking about this now, how your org chart is going to grow, who's going to be reporting to whom, how appraisals are going to work, who's going to have power over whom, how the information will flow down the org chart. And our hearts sunk, just totally. We're like, okay, great. This is exactly what we tried so hard to escape. So great. This is where we now are going to be ending up. And yeah, we just left this meeting completely deflated. And day after that, we thought, okay, maybe there is an alternative. Maybe there's another way to run a company. So we started searching and we started reading up on Zappos, on...
Have you read the book, Delivering Happiness?
Of course I have, yeah.
It's really incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then one of our favorite book that we came across was Maverick by Ricardo Semler, and then Seven Day Weekend.
That's so funny. Noah Kagan. That's so interesting. You're the only second person I've heard mention that Noah Kagan swears by that book in terms of how it helped him build his culture at Sumo. I'm just curious, because I haven't read it. So why did that book like stood out for you? Why that book?
So Semler, at the age of like 21 or 22, in the 80s, in a highly regulated manufacturing industry, managed to implement self-set pay and self-management in a company of thousands or tens of thousands. And the way this worked, his father passed the company on to him, and on his first or second day, he fired 80% of senior management because he knew he was not going to be able to implement the changes that he wanted to with these guys still in place.
Yeah.
So unbelievable chutzpah and charisma. He's got a fantastic TED talk, by the way, which I really recommend, because he's now introducing self-management in schools where kids manage their own budgets and how they're educated and what the rules are and everything else. So unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable guy.
So and you're reading this. I'm just curious. So you're reading this, right? And you're going, because on one side, there's someone who's telling you, you need to have an organizational structure and hierarchy reports, and you're dying inside. And then you're like, well, let's go and search for these, for unconventional ways, effectively, of running businesses.
Exactly.
And you come across this idea of self-management and, what do you call it? Self-regulating salaries? What's the technical term?
Self-set salaries.
Self-set salaries, cool.
I'm not entirely sure if it's a technical term, but that's what we call it.
And so you read this and you go, and that speaks to you, right? You go like, that's exciting.
Exactly. And we go like, wow, he managed to do that in the 80s in manufacturing industry in a company, in a huge company. Maybe we can do it in a small startup. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we started having conversations with people that who thought differently. We started reading books. From those books, we learned about other books and about other sources. And then little by little, we realized, no, we don't have to kind of follow the set path of creating and building a company and creating an org chart and reporting lines and appraisals and bosses. And
because what were you doing there? Sorry to interrupt, and I'm going to interrupt a lot because it's what I do. But what were you doing then?
So back then, we had maybe between 5 and 10 people in the company.
So you already started Grantree?
Yeah. So we were, it was Grantree.
Okay, sorry.
It's just that now it's 10 years old and back then it was maybe 2 or 3 years old.
Got it. Right. Cool. Makes sense now. So the stuff that you'd started, right? So when you, because that's interesting. That's even more interesting because I think it's one thing starting a company with the intention of setting up to be different, but once you've already started and having to shift to a different model, how challenging was that? Right, because you already had, what did you say, 5 to 10 employees, or did you say the 5 team members?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So you already had some people there. You already had some systems and culture in place, right? Because after 2 years, you've got something going. How challenging was that, or not, to try and implement something completely different?
I would say that we're only just starting to implement systems. So we're only just starting to realize, hang on a second, like we're a bunch of intelligent people that are pulling all in different directions. So maybe it's time to figure out how we are going to operate in this company.
Yes.
So it was precisely the time when we wanted to introduce systems and we hired that coach. And that's how the whole thing came about.
Got it. Okay. Makes sense now. Totally. So you've got this. Okay. You're reading. So you said Maverick, Delivering Happiness. What was the third one?
7-day weekend, also by Ricardo Semler. There was something about, I think, Valve software, the kind of culture and mission statements. There were a few books that we were reading at the time that really, really influenced us. Things like Robert Keegan's In Over Our Heads and Frederick Laloux's Reinventing Organizations.
I was going to ask you. I was going to say, I was like, that sounds the kind of book that you'd be all over.
Absolutely, we were, but much later. Absolutely.
Yeah, because that, it's interesting because it's like, it's such an interesting concept. And I wonder how implementing it. I've heard organizations try and implement it and miserably failing.
Yeah.
And some people taking bits of it. Because I'm guessing when you started, it was still with the same mission, right? To like, help tech startups navigate the complex world of government funding. Was that always the kind of the idea when you started off Grantree?
Yes, it was. Okay. So we started off working on R&D tax credits, research and development grants, and essentially taking on tech startup and scale up clients to help them secure equity free funding. That's right.
That's so cool. Okay, cool. So you're starting off, you're scaling up. Because I know, like, you sent me over, like, since 2010. Your team's grown from 2 to 50 and you've raised over £200 million for more than 600 technology startups. I mean, those are like big numbers, right? Like when someone listens to this, it can sound like it's crazy. What have you learned about yourself in the process?
God, a lot, so much. I learned that it was difficult for me to follow systems, that I wasn't kind of the type of person who would follow traditional structures and the set ways of doing things. I guess maybe I've known that already, but it was particularly daunting at the time to realize that the set path of growing a company wasn't something that we're interested in. And therefore, you know, are we prepared to take the risks? Are we prepared to do what it takes to
venture into the unknown?
Exactly. So I learned that about myself. I learned that I was quite resilient, that I was able to take those risks. Even when things didn't work out, we persevered. So I remember we had that scoring system on a whiteboard where people would think up what their goals were for the next 3 months and would put kind of a green tick next to the goal if they managed to achieve it. And one employee told us that she felt like she was in a kindergarten and that it totally didn't work for her because she was intrinsically motivated and she was there because she believed in what we were doing and the way we wanted to do it. So there were some wake-up calls when we realized, oh, maybe this isn't working, or maybe you know, we need to tweak this, or maybe we need to leave this mm-hmm. thing altogether. And we persevered. And it was probably, to be honest, more thanks to my business partner than me that we kind of continued in that way. I was, there were quite a few moments where I was doubtful whether, you know, it's worth all the effort.
Yes.
And even when the company grew, is it worth, you know, taking all the more we did it, the more I was convinced that that is the way. And even if it's difficult, that is the way. Since I was sounding like a Mandalorian, if you watch that show.
I don't, but
this
it's,
is the way, but it, this is yeah. the way.
But it's interesting because it's true. I think from what I've heard from people in trying to implement Holacracy.
Yeah.
And you're right, like just a different way of elevating consciousness of an organization and humans, I guess, that make part of it. It's tough. There's a lot of resistance. I remember when a friend of mine who was kind of a bit of a coach in that, she kind of like specialized in teal organizations. She would tell me some of the stuff and I was like really challenged by it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, but how does that work? She was like, yeah, everyone knows everyone's salaries. You know, I forgot, like there were just all these different principles that she was walking me through. And I was really fear. I remember it. And it's like all fear based.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my question for you is, what helped you to move or at least dance with the fear that comes with resistance and start? Because you said it yourself. You said, if you're honest, your partner was probably a little bit more driving and believing and hoping and holding that fort, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you were like a little bit more doubtful. Like, what helped you lean into the discomfort of the unknown?
So probably from my own personal development, I already understood that discomfort is actually healthy. And the greatest things are always born in discomfort, as at least, you know, for me. The idea for the company Grand True is actually born out of frustration with a team I was working before.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this idea for culture was also born out of my frustration with the cultures I experienced in the past. So I was kind of trusting discomfort to a certain extent and seeing that even though there are moments of doubt, people were really stepping up and there was so much sense of responsibility and ownership and it really, things started to click into place. So there were moments of doubt, but there were also moments when we were like, okay, this is the way for us.
Yeah. And did you lose people along the way? Were there like people like, this is just not for me, and the system kind of auto-regulated and it just had to part ways or had to have some difficult conversations? Like, I'm just curious about how, was everybody on board?
I think that it's only natural that some people discover it's not necessary for them. And we are always kind of very honest about, okay, this is definitely not for everyone. This is definitely something that needs to be along the lines of what you believe in and what you, the kind of environment where you want to spend 70 to 80% of your time. So
yeah,
I think it was clear from the beginning it wasn't going to be a hit with everyone. Did we lose people because of it? It's hard to say. Some people gravitated towards the company first and then away from it. Was it because of the way we're managed?
Yeah.
Difficult to say.
Yeah.
Probably in some cases.
But you didn't have like an explicit example, said, you know what, this is too much for me, or I'm so not used to this. Because the reason I'm asking this is, I find that there's something about when you stay true to your values, when you stay true to your course of direction of what you're aiming for, it's going to attract and repel people.
For sure.
Right? Like some people are going to hear what you're saying, going, my God, that sounds amazing. Other people like would be terrified. Because walk us through, without having to talk about anything you can't talk about, but talk us about some of the practical stuff of like, what does that mean, right? When you've got a sort of set salary scheme, when people show up, does that mean that everybody in the organization knows everybody else's salaries? Does that mean that when you do a job interview, someone comes up and you go, well, what do you think the salary should be?
Exactly that. It means exactly that. We ask the candidates exactly that question. So obviously we advertise with a salary bracket, like this is what we think is the right bracket for this type of job, but you tell us because you've got more experience than we do. So you state the figure and we tell you if it's doable from our perspective. And then on an ongoing basis, we'd expect people to actually research the market, be in touch with recruiters, do their own self-assessments monthly to figure out whether they're meeting the goals they set for themselves, gather peer-to-peer reviews, because that's also part of the process, and update their salaries regularly. This is something that we expect from people.
So what is that? So, okay. So obviously for someone who's completely outside the system, I love it. And like I'm admirative of you and the system. And I've got like all sorts of juicy questions. Mm-hmm. One of them is, okay, so let's say you've got a position opening up, right?
Yes.
Account manager, I don't know, just made that word up, whatever the technical term is, right? So account manager, looking at someone who's got a little bit of experience, not necessarily super senior, and you decide like the bracket's going to be between, I don't know, I'm throwing a figure completely random, right? 28K. Okay, well, 60 and 80, there you go, even better. Yeah. Between 60 and 80K, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, we feel, based on our experience and what we've seen, we think it's 60, 80, right? Cool. You go to market, someone comes in, and you tell them, actually, we want you to come up with a figure. Have you found that most people actually come up with a figure which is reasonable, and you go, yeah, that makes sense? Or have some people kind of come back and said 120,000?
Well, if they're going to come back with that, and based on assessments, it's way above what this kind of job should pay, then we're just going to say no thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
So it's easy to deal with. It's easy to deal with at the beginning. Have people actually come up with that? No, people haven't come up. People already inside the organization haven't come up with hugely overestimated figures, because they also have access to our accounts and our budgets, and they know how the company is performing, and they are in touch with the budget holder, so they know, you know, roughly how much is available for salaries in a given quarter.
Ah, got it. So they can see, like, we've got $500,000. I'm just putting a figure out there. It doesn't matter. $500,000 for salaries for the year.
Yeah.
And you can, but do they have a breakup of like everybody else's salary? Can you see what anyone is?
Yes. They know each other's salaries as well. Yeah.
So, okay. So that is fascinating to me, because I can't tell you the amount of times awkward conversations in the workplace around how much did you negotiate? And you're like, I'm not telling you,
because if I tell you. Conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. Famous. Right. Because. Mm-hmm. Oh, like you hear someone else got a different deal than you did for the same job, or paid more for, like, and you're just like, what? And that's almost based on, is it Iceland? I think it's Iceland. Maybe I'm confusing. I want to say it's Iceland. Anybody listening to this can call me out on this. Who have a policy every year, you can go back and look at any citizens in the world, their salary they made that year.
Mm-hmm.
Every tax report is made public.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And so, therefore, there's no like, oh, how much is X and so making? So what does that change? What does that change internally in terms of a culture? You've obviously been in cultures that didn't have that. Mm-hmm. You started off with a culture that didn't have that, and then you transitioned and migrated to that. What would you say to someone listening to this? What are the pros and cons? What have been some of the challenges? What have been some of the gifts?
Sure. So the system automatically self-corrects. So it eliminates the pay gap out of the existence, and not just gender pay gap, but socioeconomic pay gap as well. So that's really, really good. What's difficult, if there are any conflicts to be had, they bubble up much quicker. So things come to the surface much quicker, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it might be seen as bad. So there was once a situation where somebody decided to pay themselves for a role that they were just beginning to enter into. So not for, you know, they've already been doing this and they have proved that they are efficient and they know what they're doing, but they're entering into a new role and they're going to pay themselves for that new role. Mm-hmm. And they didn't end up actually living up to that later on, and there was a conflict on the team about that, and guess what, the person in question had to deal with that conflict, and it was their responsibility because it was their decision, and they eventually decided to lower their salary back to where it used to be. So so it's, you know, a massive degree of self-responsibility that's required, because, you know, if you decide to pay yourself something that's unreasonable, then you have a whole lot of conflicts to deal with the next day.
Yes, got it. And this is how regularly, like how regularly do people regulate their salaries?
They are advised to do it twice a year.
Okay. Okay. So it's not crazy like every month.
No, because then it would just, we would be spending most of our time working on our salaries, yes, instead of doing the work that we're doing for our clients. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. You know, also what I love about that is that it's, the word trust came up, right? It takes a tremendous amount of trust to trust the system to self-regulate.
Yes.
Right. To basically say, there is not a conflict we can't resolve. There isn't anything, like, we're going to go from the foundation that we're all going to trust each other to do our best. It's almost like Bitcoin. I know it's a cryptocurrency, right? It's a bit of a weird metaphor, but the idea of that, you can't really cheat the system in theory, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to be accountable to everybody else.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that's quite fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you think is the next frontier for you? What is something that you've got your eyeballs on, or something that you've been thinking about, but maybe haven't pulled the trigger on? Or what do you think is the next frontier at Grantree? Like, okay, you've pioneered this self-set salary scheme. You're operating from a, you know, holacracy. What do you feel like is the next daring step for you?
4-day work week. We've been talking about it for a while.
Please make that happen.
Yeah, I would love to. And there are some examples of companies who have done it successfully and who have actually ended up being more efficient in the 4 days as opposed to 5 days. So there are studies proving that it works. But it's,
without naming what company it was, without naming any companies, once upon a time, many, many, many years ago, when I used to work somewhere, I realized that I could do everything I did in a week in like 3 or 4 days, no jokes, just to hit my KPIs, right?
Yeah.
And I would spend about a day doing other stuff, you know. Which I don't need to name, but I was doing other stuff. Yeah. And that's made me realize, like, that is so crazy that we've somehow based output based on predictive input as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah.
As opposed to going like, we're aiming for this. What is it going to take to get that? We don't really care as long as you get that, right? Like, whether you do it in 4 days or 5 days, who cares?
Yeah.
Right? Apart from control and ego, I can't think of anything. So cool. So are you guys actually actively looking at that, or is that something like down the line that you're thinking?
We have been talking about it. So watch this space. Okay.
Yeah. We'll get back to my conversation with Paulina in just 1 minute. Now, if you are running a business, chances are you don't take that much time to look back and see what's going right and what needs to change. That's because we often lack a perspective. Well, I've created a roadmap for you to be able to benchmark yourself against the 5 principles that you need in order to become the spotlight in your industry. Now, this has been built based on the hundreds of clients that I've worked with, but really on the hundreds of coaches and thought leaders and authors and athletes and politicians that I've interviewed over the years, and boil down the 5 things that made them so unique. If you want to figure out what are those 5 things and how you benchmark against them, go and take the free test. It's 3 minutes and it's available at www.becomethespotlight.com, and you can find out exactly what areas you need to improve on and which you can celebrate. I can't wait to read your score. That's www.becomethespotlight.com. Now let's get back to our powerful conversation. Okay, cool. So one of the things I always wanted to talk to you about, is your upcoming book, which, yay, I'll be honest, totally grabbed my attention.
Thank you.
Because I was just like, what? Like that just, I hope I'm doing justice. I'm going to read off my notes here. You know, laid bare what the business leader learned from the stripper.
That's it.
Describing the leadership lessons that you learned as a burlesque dancer. The floor is yours. I mean, talk about a hook. By the way, I'm running a workshop on Friday for a bunch of entrepreneurs and business leaders and founders around how to get on a podcast as a podcast guest. And one of the concepts I told them is have a hook.
Yeah.
Have an interesting hook. Like, talk about interesting hook. So tell us, walk through this. Like, how did this happen? How did you end up being interested, fascinating, curious about burlesque dancing? I want to hear it all.
Yeah, sure. No worries, Mark. So it was maybe 2 or 3 years into the existence of Grantree that I was just really tired, to be honest, like tired of just using my head and not using my kind of badass, creative, mischievous potential and kind of that bit of charisma that I knew I had. And I was like, I need to do something out there. I need to do something risque. I just need to feel my power again. And I remember there was a particular day when I was having those thoughts, and I was having a meeting near Piccadilly Circus. And then I was walking back from Piccadilly Circus towards Leicester Square, and there was a place there that used to be called Café de Paris. I'm not even sure if it still exists. Okay. But they, I stopped by, and they were just having a rehearsal for a burlesque show. And I was like, I'm going to find out how to become a stripper. I want to do this. I want to do this shit. I really want to do this. And so I made a few calls.
Just technical question. What's the difference between a burlesque dancer and a stripper in the minds of people might be an exotic dancer in a bar or in a club?
Yeah.
You know? Just what's if there is, like, I'm just coming from there, this place.
Curious. So it depends. In some people's vocabulary, it is very different. In some people's vocabulary is quite similar. Okay. But when I think burlesque dancer, which is effectively what I was, I think a show with a narrative, with maybe an element of stand-up comedy in it, or circus,
like slapsticks.
Or like a bit like a sketch with strippage in it. And when I think stripper is more, that could be a pole dancer, or it could be an exotic dancer, or it could be lap dancer. So it's more like a strip club, kind of a different kind of venue. Burlesque clubs attract a lot of women. There's a lot of fun, cheering, whooping. It's just like
less stag,
hilarious,
more like girls' night out.
Exactly. Although it's men and women, and in strip clubs you'll find mostly men, and it's about, you know, strippers there are kind of performing an act in order to attract interest of potential punters to do a lap dance for. So I was a burlesque artist, but for the purposes of a hook, I decided to use the word stripper.
Yes.
Because effectively you do
it's
strip
a strong
as a
title.
Yeah, thank
it's
you.
It's such a strong title, because I'm in the middle of trying to ideate titles and stuff, and I just thought that is awesome. So
thank you.
You set your mind on, I want to go and try this out.
Yes.
Did you have any inhibitions, any fears, any kind of like stuff that came up around that?
So one thing that did come up is, what if one of our Grand Tree clients is in the audience, or somebody, you know, what if? So for a period of time, I felt like I was living in two worlds, or I had a bit of a split personality. I had my daytime personality and my nighttime personality.
Yes.
And that was the case until, I think it was December 2014, when I was invited to do a TEDx talk, and I was like, sod it. I'm actually going to bring the two personalities on stage in real time. So what happened, I created a slideshow of my saucy burlesque stripping kind of pictures that I was having, that I was screening on the wall. And in the front, I was in my very, very serious burlesque persona, saying like, I don't know who that is. That person would drive my career into the pavement. Yeah. Like, if you ever don't ever tell that this has got anything to do with me. So, and that TEDx talk went down really well, maybe not as well as yours, but it did do quite well.
Any TEDx that has more than 100 views, in my view, it has an impact,
it's
right?
Success.
But wait a second. So you, do you remember the first time you went to the burlesque? I don't even know. Is there a school? Like, do you go and learn?
So, on that day, it was the same day that I popped into that show rehearsal. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to find out. So what I typically do when I need to find out about something, I make a few calls, right? Sometimes I Google stuff, but I usually make a few calls and rely on people in my network to help me out. So I made a few calls, dropped a few emails, and one of my girlfriends came up with like, oh, there's this school called De Chico Bit, which is, again, a great, great name. the cheek of a burlesque school. And I enrolled in a course during which you would kind of create your persona and create your little sketch and develop it, you know. Everybody in the group had to develop their own sketch and would kind of show their progress.
And these are all women? I mean, stupid question, but is this all women or is
this one was all women. However, there is such a thing as boylesque, before you ask. So it is definitely available to men, yeah.
Okay, just curious. So I'm just gonna, so I'm going into the mind of people listening to this, right? Yeah. Because you're talking about this like, oh yeah, just, you know, went out there, did my sexy, saucy, empowered, creative maven. Someone listened to this, like, as someone myself who went through a deeply traumatic experience of doing stand-up comedy for the first time and realizing I was actually not that funny, and all these fears that come up as I was approaching the date of the actual live performance.
Yeah.
Did, and maybe you didn't, but I'm just trying to get an insight in, like, was there a moment that you were fearful? Like, I know you said about the impact to be of career, but was there a, was it just excitement? Like, did you have a conversation with your partner at the time? And I don't know what your relationship with your partner is, but maybe your partner is super cool and open. But did you feel like, oh, what if my partner takes it badly or doesn't understand why I'm doing this?
Yeah. So he was my at that point, it was still my boyfriend, or was my husband. I think my boyfriend still. He was actually superbly supportive because he could see that I was kind of really empowered because of it and having a lot of fun, and he loved how it made me feel, so that was amazing. And I don't remember being particularly embarrassed, maybe because, you know, during the course and there were quite a few ladies there, we kind of empowered each other. It was like this cumulative effect where we were like all in it and developing our acts and like
Find
getting excited about the graduation show. And it was And when I came off stage after performing that first act, then I developed several, but after performing that first act...
Wait, we're going to stop it. Before you go off you're about to go on stage, right? You're on the crowd's roaring. Have you invited people to this event? Or have
of
you just
course,
told
yeah, of okay, course okay, I have. Okay, yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, great. So you've got people in the room, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just walk us through really quickly. Take us back to that emotion of you taking those first steps as your persona onto this new kind of stage.
So it was just, I was so elated. So it was this, so typically a stripper, a burlesque artist kind of, stomps onto the stage and like something happens and they like do something crazy, and what I did, I walked in and I had like made to measure suit made, okay, for, because I was this corporate dragon. I was this corporate dragon. Underneath that suit I had a made to measure costume made of belts and chains underneath that suit. So but again, so I walk in that suit and I had like leather gloves. And I like stare at the audience and silence. Nothing happens. And like 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. I take off one glove and I slap it on the ground. And again, 1 second silence. And just the tension, the energy in that room. It was just divine. It was something that I live for as a public speaker and as a performer. And then I kind of sat on my lounger, which I had on stage, and I started to sing my song, how I, you know, I stomp on dead bodies of men on my way to the top as a corporate dragon, and I don't care about anyone, and I'm just going to fired that guy who just had his baby because I don't care and he is not performing as well as he used to. And then during the course of the act, I reveal what I really truly desire, which is to be used up by one of those men. It was, oh my God, it was one of the best moments of my life, to be honest, giving that first performance. It was like a first hit of, I don't know what drug, because I don't really use drugs that much, but just the elation, the exhilaration that I felt.
Do you know what? It's funny. Like, it reminds me of that first line I gave on the stand-up comedy and that first laugh that lands.
Yes.
And then you go, that's why stand-up comedians get addicted to this.
Yes.
Because it's like, You've been marinated on the stupid joke for like weeks and you don't know if it's going to work. You've tried it on a few friends and everybody thinks you're lame. And you go on stage and you just say this first line and you're stressed and it just relief, right? While yours,
yeah,
yours also, like, as you were saying, I just felt this power, this sense of like fire and just stepping into your own. So I know I'm conscious of time, and I just want to land a few lessons. So what are some of the lessons that the business leader learned from the stripper then? What did you manage to translate from the stage to, say, the metaphorical boardroom?
Yeah, so for example, the importance of sticking out, being comfortable sticking out. As a the stripper sticks out when they're on stage, when they're undressing, obviously the attention is on them. And the more ridiculous the costume, the better, generally. And the same with entrepreneurs, you really have to be comfortable standing out from the crowd, being different, finding a way to maybe piss off a few people in your industry because they have a vested interest in things running the old way. So yes, being comfortable with standing out, sticking out. There's something about vulnerability. So when you kind of show your ass on stage to a crowd of people, and maybe it's not a perfect ass, but it doesn't matter. What really matters is that you're hilarious and that you've got this kind of stage presence and charisma. And the same, there's something about showing your heart and vulnerability in business as well. That's so important, and it so helps me kind of land my different leadership style than I used to have. Yeah. So I used to be very kind of coming from my masculine center, because I believe that both genders, both men and women, have a masculine and feminine center. Mm-hmm. I was very kind of driven, ambitious, and not as more into doing than into being. Yes. More into ambition than vulnerability. So it really helped balance me out. And also it showed
me
that I'm...
Did you feel there was also a sense from control to surrender?
Oh, yeah.
Trust? Yeah.
Definitely. Because when you're on stage, there's only as much control as you have. You practice those gags, as you said, you know, in a stand-up comedy. You know what you're going to say. You know the act that you're going to... And there's only so much control you have. You don't know who is in the audience. You don't know how much booze they've had. You don't know what act was. Well, maybe you do know what act was before, but it will influence the way the audience is prepared for you. So there's only so much you can control. And there comes that moment when you're on stage and you're going to let go and just find your flow and just engage in that energetic dance with the audience, which just feels like, I don't know, there's something sexual about it, because it feels like you're giving and receiving energy, and it's just so visceral the way you can feel that energy when you're on stage.
And it's instant.
It's just stunning.
So how long are you still doing this, or how long have you done that? Like, how long did you keep on performing?
I was doing it for a few years. I recently stopped because it felt like, okay, it's kind of reached its pinnacle. It did what I wanted it to do, and
the
now
it
might be a time for something else. Yeah. So it felt like I was performing in the same clubs, coming across the same people all the time, and it felt like, okay, I've challenged myself. I've done this. I've expressed something, and it's done. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. What's the next thing? Is there something that's calling you that you're interested or curious in?
Yeah, good call. So I dance tango, which I really love, obviously not during the pandemic, but it's something that gives me creative
fulfillment. It's not very COVID friendly,
Not very COVID friendly, no social distancing there.
Yeah.
I have been thinking about pole dancing. I've got a couple of friends who are doing pole dancing, not in clubs, but more as an athletic thing. It's fantastic for your fitness.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've been thinking about for a while.
So I've got to ask you, right? Because your fear was, what if a client saw me?
Yes.
And then you went public with your TEDx talk about your experience.
Yes.
And now you're going super public with your book.
Yes.
Right? Did A, those fears come to life? Or B, how are you with those fears today?
I'm actually, this is me, and not everybody's going to like this, but this is the entirety of who I am. And if anything, it makes me more powerful and more colorful. And one interesting story I have is I actually got invited on quite a prestigious panel in the tech space, which is the policy advisory panel of Institute of Engineering and Technology. And I had no idea up to a point why I got invited to that panel. until I found out that the chairman at the time, who is this awesome guy who's in senior management of Rolls-Royce, or senior, I don't know, he's a partner probably now. He saw my TEDx talk and he got somebody like a PA or somebody like that to reach out to me. And I was like, this is incredible. It clearly, you know, maybe not everybody's buying it, but people who are buying it, they're really seeing me for who I am and kind of see how that contributes to my power as opposed to taking away from it.
Mm. Yeah. And I really hope everyone's listening to this loud and clear, because I speak on a daily basis to entrepreneurs, business leaders, founders, CEOs, who are terrified deep down of being seen truly and becoming more visible in their industry and putting themselves out there, despite the great gifts they have, despite the quote unquote success they've had.
Yeah.
And all these fears, right, that they list. Yours was, what if someone from Grantree sees me and then we lose a client and the whole business goes down? We end up, you know, losing all this because of dance. But I wish everybody could listen to that, because there is such a gift beyond the fear. Almost, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what I've experienced, what I've seen people experience, is almost a sense of release and freedom and acceptance and creativity and flow that is very difficult to be in a state when you're so tightly holding on to control and fear.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
don't know,
absolutely. So whoever's listening to this, really embrace all the aspects of who you are, because there's so much power there. And I'm still learning it, because there's still aspects of me that I haven't brought into the light and embraced, but I'm really fascinated by this concept that we are comprised of these many parts, and in the intersection of where they meet lies the true power.
I love that. I'm looking at my phone, not to be rude, but because I want to read a quote from Hadrian Chatley, who I'm doing some work with around branding. He sent me this quote. He said, "I thought about you this weekend because of RuPaul said something really true." And this is what RuPaul said: "The greatest act of rebellion you can do is to be yourself." Loved it. And it reminds me of what you just said, right? Okay, so people can go and check out at paulinatenna.com /list if they want to add themselves to the waiting list for your book coming out, and you're going to give them a free download. The CUNT leadership framework.
Yes.
For those who joined, so we'll plug that in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, did you say something? Yeah.
The book used to be called CUNT in the Workplace. And because I received a big cake, birthday cake, with, because I'm known as the dirty joker in the office, basically.
Okay.
So I received that cake with the big letter CUNT on top of it. And I was walking around and saying, "Would you like a piece of my cake?" And people were like, there's this guy who went completely pink and it was hilarious. But CUNT stands for, other than, you know, I believe that Kant is actually a powerful word. Mm-hmm. It's got a pretty serious etymology. And I think it should be a compliment other than a curse, because it's actually very powerful. There's some kind of dark power behind it. And I just really love the way it sounds and the way it lands. And I really would love for it to kind of change how people use it. Yeah. Anyway, C stands for curious, U stands for unapologetic, N stands for notorious, and T stands for trustful. So there's a little kind of download of I feel that's a combination of feminine and masculine attributes that amount to conscious leadership. And you'll get a little PDF with that if you sign up to my waiting list.
Awesome stuff. And you're excited about the book launch? You're excited for this book to hit?
Yeah, of course I am. Yeah. A little bit nervous. It's my first book and I'm kind of doing...
How did you find the process? Like, how did you find... the process of writing, like, and by, because we were on a Clubhouse together last night. I totally squatted the stage and you guys brought me on, which I thought was awesome. But and we talked about this briefly last night, but man, it's no small feat what you've done, right?
Thank
to pull yourself on a page and to put that out in the world. I just want to hear in your own words, what was the experience like for you?
I absolutely love the creative process. So the first 3 months where the first draft pulled out of me were magical. I was just like, oh my God, I love writing. I didn't know I loved writing. This is awesome. And then the second draft, where I started thinking about, okay, who is this book for? Why would they read it? Mm-hmm. That was more challenging, because suddenly I had to really frame my creative process and start it. I had to start kind of binning whole sections that I've written because they were just not for that book. And they didn't fit the concept. And then I decided, okay, so it is a story about a stripper and a business person. So how am I going to tell that story? So it then lasted maybe a year before I had another year before I had the more or less final version. And now I'm starting to realize that writing a book is just half of the story. Promotional work is the other half of the story. So
if not more.
Yeah, if not more, because
this is going to be forever green. Well, look, I'm really excited for you. I hope your book does wonders. I hope that you just have as much fun with promoting and sharing about it as you do, as you did as writing it. I think it's really cool that you're, you know, pioneering the workplace and trying to disrupt the way that people show up at work. And I'm sure there's way more cool stuff that you guys are doing internally to shape a culture and stuff. I've got another book down the line around culture. I'd love to interview for it because I think you'd be a great fit.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I'm talking about like disruptive organizations changing the way we show up at work. That's like down the line. It's like two books from this one. but anyway, just so you know, that putting it out there. Before I ask you my final question, I just want to acknowledge you because it's first of all, you're the first person to say the C word on this podcast, so that's awesome. There's always a first.
Yay! Drum roll.
And I just thought it's such a beautiful and powerful way of using a metaphor of being naked on stage to actually find your true power.
Thank you.
And how many of us are terrified? How many of us would that be the worst possible fear of being seen naked in front of strangers?
Mm-hmm.
Right? While holding, and I put air quotes for people listening to this, holding a professional front of with a, not just a business you're working at, but a business you're running. And I think that's awesome. I really hope that this message lands. And I just want to say thank you for that because that's awesome. I was fascinated by humans like you who are just disrupting and unconventional. So big heartfelt thank you.
Oh, bless you. And one thing I would say is that once you've shown your ass to a bunch of strangers, there's not much more you're afraid to do. So you discover that kind of power hidden deep inside you that, you know, will break through anything. So definitely, if in doubt, undress in front of strangers.
in certain context, let's not like, 100% before I put like a disclaimer of remember me too, people, there's certain areas you shouldn't be getting naked.
Maybe not in the park,
Just
so behind a bush, do it on one stage.
One of the final questions I've got for you is, what does being unconventional mean to you?
I love it. What you just said, that quote around the most rebellious thing you can do is to be truly yourself. So I think that some people say, oh, I'm not unconventional, I'm a kind of normal bloke or girl. You've got a whole wealth of unconventionality and rebelliousness available to you, and it's not about dressing up ridiculously, or it's not about necessarily becoming a burlesque dancer. It lies in being truly open to reveal yourself as you are, moment by moment.
In this moment.
Yes.
And in this moment.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes, okay, so I was supposed to have a business meeting 2 hours ago with somebody I met on Clubhouse. He does impact investing. I do angel investing. Simple story, right? And we ended up talking about mental health, eating disorders, and God. And then we decided we're going to book another call to maybe discuss impact investing. But that's, you know, if you're truly open to what's possible in human connection or just in your connection with yourself, moment to moment, you're going to find out so much. You're going to find so much unconventionality there that it's just words can't describe it. If you're really Love open it. To what can happen in a moment, in a connection with another being, on in your connection with yourself.
Yeah. Love it, Paulina. Thank you so much. Where is the best place for people to hook up with you online? This, you know, apart from the newsletter or the sign up that they can sign up for the waiting list for your book, where do you hang out most these days online?
Clubhouse, probably, and it's at Paulina Tenner, or Instagram as well, Paulina Tenner, Twitter, Paulina Tenner. Easy.
I'm so glad.
But Clubhouse mostly these days.
I've been calling you Paulina the whole interview. As well. Paulina is way better.
Huh?
So apologize. I've been calling you Paulina the entire interview, but Paulina is way better. So thank you for correcting me on
that. Okay, that's fine. No, like, I totally don't mind. It's absolutely fine.
I was like, oh, it's Paulina. That's how you pronounce it.
It's Pau. That's why a lot of people call me Pau. Like, I'm known as Pau. Yeah, Pau, Pau, Pau.
Okay. Yeah. Paulina, thank you so much. That was awesome. Really appreciate that.
I really loved it, Mark. Copy.
And to many more unconventional ripple effects.
I would love that. Let's do it.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. Talk about an unconventional leader and just a totally different approach to leading. Really, I love it because it challenges me, right? And also, I was so curious to hear how Paulina just didn't, how she danced with fear and how she's looking for her next adventure and how really in life, like all things, when we come to the end of a season, it's okay to quit and change and move on, right? So that was like a really powerful. If you want to find out more about Paulina, make sure to go and check her out over on Instagram, Twitter, Clubhouse at Paulina Tenner. But you're going to have all the show notes underneath in over on the website. And if you enjoyed today's conversation, please make sure to share it with a friend who needs to hear this. And of course, it would mean the world to me if you could leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcast. It helps spread the word dramatically. Without further ado, I just wanted to say thank you for being here. Thank you for your attention. I'm looking forward to hearing what you got out of this episode. Remember that your story matters, your message has value, and that we need you to show up so you can step up and change the world in your own way. I can't wait to see what you get up to and the ripple effect of your own impact. I'll speak to you soon, and I'll see you on the next episode. Today's episode was brought to you by Become the Spotlight. If you hate the idea of having to be in the limelight and the center of attention, here's the good news. There's a paradigm shift that you can adopt, which enables you to stop focusing on yourself and start focusing on the very thing that you're trying to bring attention to, whether that's your customers, an issue, a problem that the world needs to pay attention to. If you want to find out how to become the spotlight in your industry, it's really easy. Head over to www.becomethespotlight.com and take the 3-minute assessment. It's free and it's going to give you a clear guideline and some benchmarks in which you can see which areas you're doing great and which areas you need to improve on. I've been getting amazing messages and results from people taking the test. So go over to www.becomethespotlight.com and find out for yourself what your impact scorecard is. I can't wait to see your number.